Welcome to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. Let's get today's show started with your host and founder of the BD Academy, Rob Brown.
And welcome to the show, and I'm delighted to have with me today and truly honored to have an academic heavyweight from New York. It's Baruch Lev. Hello to you, sir.
Hello.
Hello. Tell us a little bit about your background and how you came to be doing what you're doing.
Well, I was born in Israel and studied there, undergraduate, then went to University of Chicago, got my MBA and a PhD in finance, accounting, economics. I was always fascinated with investors, use of information, and the backbone of information, which are the financial reports that coming from corporations. Then was at the University of Berkeley, was a partner in a consulting firm, and did lots of valuations. And as an accountant, originally, I always started with the financial reports, and I soon found them completely useless for valuation purposes, for mergers and acquisitions, particularly for new industries. I did lots of biotech, cell phone companies, internet services providers. So I started questioning the usefulness of financial reports. And finally, after many years, I took it seriously and wrote the book, The End of Accounting.
So how groundbreaking has this book been, Baruch? Have you turned a few heads and upset a few people?
I don't want to praise my own work, but it's very groundbreaking for the simple reason that, unfortunately, academic researchers in accounting and in finance don't really question the information. They just go ahead and use it. And of course, it has a terrible effect on their research. There may be all kinds of reasons why they don't want to challenge those forceful bodies that set accounting standards, but they don't. So my book was really like a bombshell. It's already been translated to four languages, and for its kind, it's a bestseller, used extensively, particularly by investors, by hedge funds. And I appear a lot before hedge funds that are intrigued by this loss of usefulness, which to some extent they, of course, feel in their own work.
Did you expect this kind of controversy? Because calling the book The End of Accounting, that's a provocative title, isn't it?
I intentionally had a provocative title. Can you imagine if I had a book like Problems with Accounting Information? I mean, who would read such a thing?
Yeah, and we'll dip into the book, of course. But tell us, what kind of shape do you feel the accounting profession is in generally at the moment?
It's in a terrible shape. They basically do the same thing that they did 20 years ago and 30 years ago. I must tell you, and I'm saying it with lots of sorrow, that when we teach accounting today, it's extremely similar to the accounting that I learned 45 years ago. There is basically no significant changes. Of course, lots of bells and whistles, lots of regulation, very costly, but basically it's the same balance sheet and income statement and earnings. And you wonder, with all the changes that information systems go, the basic information systems are of corporation is really not much changing. I'm a history buff, and my friends know it. So a few years ago, someone came to my office and said, Baruch, here is the first financial report of a U.S. company, which is U.S. Steel 1902. This is 117 years ago.
Wow.
Financial report. I expected something incredibly primitive. I open the financial report. I tell you, it's better than the financial reports today. It has everything. It has a full balance sheet and income statement and cash flow statement, but it has lots of other things too, which reports today don't have. I send it to all the FASB, Financial Accounting Standards Board members, and ask them to just indicate to me what the improvement over the last 170 years are. Mm. And I got some nasty responses.
It is frightening how the profession, the industry has not changed over this time. Even the way we train accountants hasn't changed. We still teach them the same things. Many things, in fact, that can be done by the push of a button. So what or who is resisting this change?
A major problem is that the main influencers, which are, of course, corporate managers who prepare the financial reports, and accountants, public accountants who testify them, are very happy with the current situation.
Right.
And it's very difficult to change thing when the main operators are happy.
Yeah.
For managers, this lack of transparency, this mind-boggling complexity of a 250-page report, they are very happy with this. Most of them are not all out for great transparency and disclosure. They live within the system and they are not going to break any rules. For accountants, it's like manna from heaven. Those reports, and studies have shown it, that those reports get more complex. There are now software systems that will trace complexity of language, of expression, and will give you a rating. And several studies have recently came out showing that financial reports are completely unreadable by all these measures. For them, it's terrific. I mean, they are the only ones who are supposed to understand these things. Lots of work, lots of consulting. So no one really complains.
Now, let's dip into the book a little bit. You argue in it that corporate financial reports have lost a lot of their usefulness to investors. What exactly is your proof for this?
In the book, of course, we go into all kinds of quite complex statistics. It doesn't affect the readability of the book because all the statistics and the math are in appendices. I will go to one decisive measure, and it's so decisive that it was picked up by The Economist. They had the whole page on it. I'm saying the following. If financial reports are useful, then the most important item in the financial report, which is earnings of a company, net income, quarter, a year, should be the most important information item. It should indicate the performance of companies, the change in the value of the companies. If earnings are positive, value should go up. If earnings are negative, should go down. So with my co-author, I did the following exercise. Suppose that you can, at the beginning of a quarter, predict all the companies that by the end of the quarter, which means 4 months after that, will publish very good earnings reports. They will beat analyst forecasts. Usually the target is the consensus forecast of analysts. Analysts predict earnings of companies. And if you can beat those earnings, you are terrific. So we said, let's suppose that we can predict for sure at the beginning of the quarter all the companies that will beat the forecast. And in research, looking forward, it's very easy to do this thing. And how much money will you make out of this? Magic. I mean, no one can do it, of course, in practice, but you can test it in research. So how much money you can make it? So it turns out that in the 70s and 80s, you can have made lots of money from knowing which companies will be successful and buying these companies 3-4 months ahead of time, buying the stocks, I mean, of the companies.
Yeah.
But this curve goes down steeply, and today it's nothing. You cannot make any money. People now accept it. The Wall Street Journal last year had 4 articles about the impotence of earnings. They had titles like, "You think that good earnings will raise the stock? Forget it." Something like this. So people start realizing this thing.
Yeah.
But I don't know of any other one single devastating measure taking what investors call the bottom line, the most important part of the report, and showing that it's useless, even if you could predict it.
I want to ask you about the international scene, but just to put a figure on this, you said that as little as 5% of a company's stock price appears in the reported financial data. That's so low, isn't it?
Yeah, this is the effect of a financial report on the stock price, which is one of the statistical ways that researchers are measuring impact. So if you look, for example, at the impact of an announcement of mergers and acquisitions, it has a very big impact on the stock, either up or down, depends on investors' expectations. The impact of financial report is very, very low on stock prices.
So do we have any evidence that here in the UK, for example, our accounting standards are different and perhaps better and more progressive than yours, or are we getting it wrong here too?
They are slightly different, but the trend is toward convergence. This somehow is the myth that is the optimal accounting system. There will be one system all over the world, which of course is absurd. You would like to have different systems, lots of experimentation. Can you imagine if regulations in all countries were exactly the same? It's a disaster. You want to have differences so that you'll see what works, what doesn't work, what should be changed. So in accounting, the slogan is convergence. And in recent years, both your International Accounting Standards Board and the American Financial Accounting Standards Board are basically converging. The important rules on revenue recognition, recent rules on leasing are basically joined by the two regulators. So it's not much different.
Yeah. So assuming the financial reports have lost their usefulness, who is disadvantaged by this? Who gets hurt and who really cares?
First and foremost, investors. These reports are aimed at providing systematic, useful, frequent information to investors about companies. And when it's not useful, and in many cases, it's even worse than useless. It's deceiving. I just give you one simple statistic. Because of the treatment of intangible assets, in financial reports, like investment in R&D and in brands, information systems, all of those are regarded as regular expenses. It's mind-boggling how stupid this is. But if they are regular expenses, they, of course, detract from earnings. So currently, in a booming economy in the United States, 70% of all high-tech pharmaceutical biotech companies are reporting annual losses. Can you imagine that you get a financial report in such an economy and 70% of the reports indicate negative earnings, losses? I mean, it doesn't make any sense.
But that's good for companies, though, isn't it? Because if they're not showing a profit, they pay less tax and they're not capitalizing things like R&D. So that serves the companies themselves.
In the case of R&D, definitely the case. Basically, this is a good thing from a tax purpose. It's an investment of the country in R&D. But when you come to assess the performance of the company, you look at a losing enterprise when it's really prospering. So I just want to connect it to something which is really very big. For years, people realized that managed money, meaning investments that are managed by hedge funds, by other managers, are basically doing very poorly. This is the reason that there is a constant huge migration of investors from managed money to index funds, to those funds that are automatically investing in the entire market. And everyone is lamenting the failure, the demise. There are all kinds of terms that are used for it, for managed money. One of the major reasons of the demise of managed investment, the poor performance, is the poor information that they are using. As simple as that. So when they are still using earnings and predict earnings and base decision on this, and earnings are useless, you get terrible decisions. And these ultimately hurt investors. They also hurt corporations. And this became clear to me 2 years ago. I was asked by Harvard Business School to present my book, and I talked about financial reports. And one of the professors said, Baruch, if you are right, the situation is much worse than this, because managers are using the same information for their own investments.
Yes. Yes, good point.
For evaluating units of operations, divisions, for mergers and acquisitions. So whatever hurts investors also hurts our corporation, the decisions that they make. So what I'm talking about is an effect which has widespread damage.
Will we actually see the end of accounting, or is the role of an accountant changing?
What I would prescribe are two stages, two levels, two dimensions of information coming out of companies. One is a statement which is based on fact. With all my criticism of accounting, I know that it's very important to know how much money is owed to you by your customers. How much money do you owe to your suppliers? What is the total payroll that you paid? What were total sales? So these factual things, which I call bookkeeping, this goes back like 500 years in history.
Yeah.
These things are still very, very important and very, very relevant. So we should keep the accounting system based on fact, things that can really measure with almost certainty, and report those. And then around this, there should come information which is much more relevant than the information that is produced today. I'll give you one example which is done today, but done voluntarily. This is not something that is required by accounting rules. Most pharmaceutical and biotech companies provide you regularly with very detailed information on what's called the product pipeline. All the projects that they are working on, at what stage these projects are, like phase one clinical test, phase two clinical test, these are tests on humans, phase three clinical test, and you get a table which really tells you about the future.
Yes.
Not about the past. The past is irrelevant. About the future, what are the drugs that are coming out of these companies or medical instruments? Are they near market, like phase three clinical tests, or they are at a very early stage, which usually take 5 to 7 years to get to the market. This is something which is incredibly important. Now, pharmaceutical companies provide this information after many, many years of insistent questions by financial analysts. They decided to give this information. But even now, it's really not consistent. Some companies provide only the top five products. Some provide the whole thing. Some provide top five in one quarter and top seven in other quarters. Mm. So we need some standardization, but this is the information that creates value. I give you a second example from an industry that all your listeners are customers of this industry. This is called subscription-based companies. All the companies that you have to pay a subscription for their services. So all the internet services providers, all telecom companies, all insurance companies, media companies. It's a huge number of companies that you pay regularly, monthly, quarterly for the services. They can track their customers, which supermarkets, for example, cannot, but they can track their customers. So many of them provide very detailed information every quarter about new customers or clients added, total at end of quarter, number leaving, the churn rate, which is a very important piece of information, yeah. Percentage of customers leaving you per month, customer acquisition costs. When you get this, you can actually see the future of the company, because current customers, let's say of Netflix, usually stay with the company 4 or 5 years. So when you have this kind of detailed information, you can predict the future course of the company. So I give here two examples of information that is really urgently needed by investors in a standard form so that you will be able to compare companies in an industry. These are not current financial reports. My two examples are completely voluntary. They are not required by accounting rules.
Well, this is the problem, isn't it? This deterioration, it's gone on for so long. Where are the investors and stakeholders, corporate managers acting for forcefully to change this? And perhaps why aren't some accountants banging a drum here to force change?
Here and there, there are changes. When I had the first draft of our book, at the end of accounting, first draft I sent to 10, 12 people that I appreciate their opinion to read and to tell me what they think. One of those that I sent the draft to is CEO of a very large company. He called me a couple of weeks later and he said, Baruch, I'm going to disappoint you. And my heart sank. I mean, he's a very blunt person. I thought he's going to say, this is bullshit, what you worked on for 3 years. But no, that's not what he said. He said, he meant CEO. He said, we know this, that financial reports don't provide useful information. And the proof that we know it is that it provides increasingly more voluntary information, information that is not required. And he's right. The two examples that I gave you are voluntary information. Managers realize the financial report doesn't say anything, so they give more. The problem is that there is no uniformity, there is no consistency. Sometimes they give more in bad times when there is a decrease in customers, like happened to Netflix years ago. They stopped giving the churn rate. So you need some rules. I'm generally against rules, but here you need some rules, not to tell people what they should say, but to say, if you want to disclose this information, let's say on the first 5 months, that's a good way of doing it. So managers, to some extent, are doing it. They are not fighting against the establishment. Some of them told me it's a battle that we don't want to fight. We don't want to seem like we are against financial reports, against disclosure. They don't fight the rules. They basically abide by the rules and provide some more information. It's called non-GAAP information. Accountants have to say, because I'm also a CPA, they are happy with the situation. It's like tax lawyers. Tax lawyers are not going to fight with the complexity of tax rules. They live from tax rules. They are important because of the tax rules. They are highly paid because of the tax rules. No one besides them understands these things. So that's about accountant. Investors, unfortunately, are fragmented. There are millions of investors, and it's difficult to get them somehow around one mission to fight. Economists call it the free rider problem. When you fight for a cause, you are sustaining all the costs, all the hardship. If you are successful, then everyone else benefits also. So since you benefit only, you are only a minority, the incentive to take on these huge fights are very, very low, unfortunately.
So what should be done to reverse the deteriorating usefulness of these financial reports?
You know, I changed my mind. This is the most difficult question that I'm always asked. Oh, okay, Baruch, we understand it. What should be done?
Yeah.
If it were easy, it would have been done before. Several constituencies have to change what they are doing, starting with basically all my colleagues. When I teach today accounting, I must tell you with all frankness, I am embarrassed. I am embarrassed to teach to MBAs in the 21st century a system that essentially existed 100 years ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, I have to teach it. I teach it. We have to change completely the instruction of accounting, the instruction of everything around it, financial analysis, investment analysis. It has to start with us, with really educating generations of managers. The system has to be changed. And it has to come from policymakers in the U.S., from the Senate, from Congress. Problem there is that they really don't want to get to accounting. They are very, very comfortable in getting into climate change and all other rules and regulations. Accounting is not very, as they say, sexy. Mm. And it's complicated. I testified several times before the U.S. Senate and the U.S. Congress. In one of those testimonies in which I called for a commission that will study complete change of financial report, when I talked, all the congressmen nodded their heads in yes, yes, yes. Then there was a break. One of them came to me and said, Baruch, I don't want you to raise your hope. We will not do anything. For the simple reason, he said, and this was an eye-opener for me, for the simple reason that accounting is complicated. Mm-hmm. We don't understand this thing. He said, it's easy for us to work on corporate governance. We all understand that if directors are independent, it's good. If they are not independent, it's bad. It's easy to work on executive compensation. If it's too high, it's bad. If it's tied to the performance of the company, it's good. Everyone understands this thing. But who understands the complexity of accounting? Someone will get up and said, listen, we have to look at something which costs society extremely high cost. This whole system of financial reports and the hundreds of thousands of accountants that certify these things, and the difficulties of investors of somehow deciphering a document of 250 pages long. There must be a better way of doing it. Maybe the change will come from there, but I don't see it coming soon. What depresses me is that every regulatory system, whether it's environmental, whether it's food and drug, is constantly debated in the public arena. And those debates are usually improving the system. I don't recall any time in which there was a debate about the usefulness of financial reports.
No
one appears to care about it, and regulators feel basically immune from any criticism. They can do whatever they want to do. They don't need to make big changes. So I'm somewhat pessimistic, but you know, maybe the response to our book was great. Maybe in time it will generate some kind of an action.
Well, Baruch, you're a contrarian. You've admitted that. I know that you played basketball for Israel, so you've been used to a tough battle and a fight. So are you prepared to lead this fight? And if not, who?
I definitely would like to lead this fight. Mm. 2 weeks ago, I got a call from a very famous U.S. senator. He said, I'm really depressed by the amount of information that we have on employees. Every financial report starts with employees are our major resource. And this is the last time that employees are mentioned in the 250 pages. So he said, I want much more information about productivity, about retention rate, about in-house training of employees. I don't see this information.
No.
Will you help me in getting this information? I said, of course. But then I didn't hear back from him. But I definitely would like to join anyone, professional or not professional, who is willing to contribute to make a change.
Yeah. Let's finally just project forward maybe 5, 10, maybe even 50 years after both you and I are gone. What kind of shape do you think financial reporting will be in then, if you are optimistic?
Oh, I'm sure they'll be very different. In 50 years, even in 25 years, I have no doubt that they'll be very different, because in real life, there are limits even to absurdity.
Right.
And at some point, even those hedge fund managers will realize that one of the reasons they don't make money for their clients is that the information that they use is so terrible, and they will start demanding the better information. So my guess is that in 10, 15 years, we will see some major changes in the report. I will not be here, but I'm almost sure that this will be the case. There will be also some kind of an uproar by university students being taught this stuff. You mentioned very early on in our discussion that all this accounting can be taught online, basically by a software program. And indeed, it can be taught online by a software program. You know, why waste money on going to class and paying tuition and studying these things?
I'm equally frustrated with the lack of progress in education. I'm a former high school mathematics teacher, and we're teaching things in schools these days that have absolutely no relevance to real life for children. We're not equipping them with the skills that they need. So you're just hitting your head against a brick wall trying to get change.
Yeah. Change is really difficult. Change is difficult. I don't want to wish bad on anybody, but changes usually come from disasters, dislocations, financial crisis.
Tragedy, yeah. So bringing this to a close, Baruch, this has been fantastic. If I had the power to make you overlord and supreme commander of accounting worldwide, if such a position existed, and you had the magic wand to change anything, what would you change first?
I definitely will adjust the report so that it will provide relevant information. And relevant information today, in almost all developed economies, information about what's called intangibles, information around R&D, information about IT system, information about brands, information about your human resources. Isn't it incredibly important to know how much does a company spend on in-house and out-of-house training, on really developing their workforce? It's really essential information. And isn't it important to know that in order to show some higher earnings, they cut employee training? I mean, this to me would be really alarming. This type of information in a relatively short report, not another 250 pages, 5-6 pages of 15-20 key indicators uniformly computed within industries, that's what I would try to design, and I'm sure that it can be designed.
What could accountants and accounting firms do to lead this, Burrow?
In the wake of my book, I had lots of discussions with accounting firms, and I would say the most advanced were in the UK. I found the most forward-looking people there. They would like to change the system, some of them, those really with foresight, and that's what I try to emphasize to them, are concerned that it cannot go on for long, that the financial report loses its relevance, and you, as an auditor of something which is not very useful, will continue to flourish. It's impossible.
Yeah.
If I'm auditing something which people don't want to use, I will lose my job soon. So what I try to impress on them is that you cannot be critical of the financial report and not being concerned about your own profession in the long term. If this goes down, you will go down. Most are not incredibly concerned, but some are, and trying to develop models of the financial report of the future, of this and that. There is some kind of an agreement between auditors and those regulators that auditors are not coming out criticizing them. You will never see some kind of an official declaration by the big four accounting firm, listen, this is not working. You hear it from individuals, but not formally. They are not challenging the system.
Well, Burrow, you are certainly challenging. And if people listening want to have a conversation with you and find out more and invite you to help them, what's the best way for them to reach you?
Best way is just send me an email. It's blev, B-L-E-V, at stern, S-T-E-R-N, .nyu.edu, or just Google Burrow Lev. You'll see hundreds of mentions. I also want to mention one thing which I am somewhat proud of. I have a blog and a Twitter account that goes with it, and the blog has already 34,000 downloads. So lots of people read it, and the Wall Street Journal recently had an article on good Twitter accounts, and they mentioned mine specifically there. My blog is simple. Lev End of Accounting Blog. Lev End of Accounting Blog. And I post usually every week, every 10 days, which people find interesting.
And what is your Twitter address?
It's Lev _Baruch, at Lev _Baruch.
Well, we will certainly put those on the website. This has been a fascinating account of what's really happening in the world of accounting. Thank you so much for your passion, your evangelism, your crusade here. We really appreciate your time and your insights. Thank you.
Thank you very much for giving me the opportunity.
You've been listening to Accounting Influencers, the podcast for accounting leaders and influencers who want to know exactly what makes the good firms great and the great accountants world class. For show notes on today's and other episodes, plus some great blogs and resources to help accountants lead, sell, and perform at the highest levels, go to bdacademy.pro. Until next time, have a fantastic day.